Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:16 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is July 12th. Thought I'd kick off with copper. It's down 17 cents, and that's a really meaningful breakdown. So we have the clear evidence of a type 2 top formation and then massive reaction against the prevailing trend. And now it is accelerating lower. So we can just look at the size of the moves that it's putting in. These are huge days on the downside, and it's at a new reaction low. Copper is often regarded as Dr. Copper, and it's an economically sensitive commodity. It's used in every country in the world, and it's a key component in infrastructure development. So the fact that prices are coming back so aggressively is a very clear sign that a lot of the kind of investment that would require copper is being delayed or cancelled. But then, of course, you have to also consider who's the biggest consumer of copper. Well, that's China. So, on the one hand, you have the electric vehicle manufacturers and the battery manufacturers. They must be rubbing their hands together with glee to see copper prices coming back and haven't quite halved, but well, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility. But more importantly, we're coming back down into the base formation. This is looking increasingly similar to the kind of very quick rebound we saw in 2009 through 11, which then subsequently gave way to a lengthy downtrend. Well, the downtrend is happening a lot faster on this occasion because of very tight monetary conditions. So, in many respects, it's a lot more similar to the crash that we had in 2008. Because of these very tight financial conditions, oil prices have also been pulling back. So the price at the moment is right around the $100 level and closing below it today. And this is not a bullish chart. We have a phenomenally large downward dynamic last week. Now we saw a short-term bounce, and then that was completely negated in here today. If we look at this range that's been forming now for the last 4 months, there's a preponderance of downward dynamics. There's a lot more big blue candles than there are white candles on the chart. So when people are selling, they're selling aggressively. If we see oil prices extend the decline tomorrow, then this is a completing top formation. Now, there have been a lot of big arguments about the ability or otherwise of suppliers to increase supply. And there have been lots of people talking about the inability of the big producers to increase supply and the economic recovery and the increasing demand. One of the biggest challenges for energy investors is that our analysts is that they tend to think of supply as being elastic. So when supply expands, prices go down. When supply contracts, prices go up. And against that, they tend to think of demand as a constant. But the reality is that demand is not a constant. Demand also rises and falls in line with economic growth. Now, it is not as volatile as supply, but it is not a constant. And what we're seeing right now is the real threat of a recession in China. So this is problematic. Now, if we look at the banking sector, its performance is shaded by two important factors. The first is that many of the companies are state-owned, so they're not going to go bust. Then we have these big steps in the chart. When we think about, for example, ICBC, we look at its chart pattern in on the mainland market. It pulled back exceptionally sharp today, but it's also been paying big coupons. So there have been occasions in the past where it has also exhibited these big periods of volatility. And just looking at it on the face of it, it would seem to be that, well, obviously there's a downtrend, but it also has very low valuations where there's a PE of 4 and a yield of 6.5, and it went ex-div, or it went at the ex-date was on July 3rd. We haven't had the, it hasn't been recorded yet. So it, there is the question then of whether it's selling off because the dividend is imminent, or is it selling off because of very weak internal data? If we then strip that out and just look at the CSI 300, well, we're not presented with an uptrend. And there has been a rebound, and now the price is pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. China is looking at additional lockdowns as a result of the pandemic. So the most recent variant is much more transmissible. It seems like each of the successive variants are more transmissible than the last, which is very much in line with what happens with mutations in viruses historically. China is still wedded to their quarantine program. Quarantines work best in the early stages of an outbreak because you have a chance of containing it. But we're talking about a pandemic where there are reservoirs of new infections all over the world. So a quarantine in one area doesn't work if nowhere else is quarantining. And the reality is nowhere else is quarantining. This means that China is going to have a prolonged challenge in trying to keep the coronavirus out. And the government in Beijing had to walk back their vaccine mandate 2 weeks ago. And that's something that you don't often see in China, where the communist administration has actually had to have a complete about-face in less than 48 hours, that people simply rebelled at the idea of being forced to be vaccinated. But the reality is that the Chinese domestic vaccine doesn't work. In fact, there's a lot of warnings coming out now that the vaccines that people have been taking in the West don't work against this new variant either, and that we can anticipate that there will be a big spike in breakthrough infections. And I know both my daughters have had COVID twice, and that's despite the fact that they've been vaccinated. So I think there's going to be lots of people in the same boat. Now, when we think then about what's going on in China, well, they're going to be looking at really significant challenges. The banking sector is really not looking too great, despite the fact that it has these low valuations. And copper prices are accelerating lower, and copper is highly dependent on what's happening in China. So this is obviously problematic. There is the real potential that demand for commodities in China is going to fall off a cliff, because that's what the prices are telling us. And if China goes into a recession, and the only time that China has posted negative growth was in the first quarter of 2020, and it's unlikely that they're going to report negative growth in the second quarter of this year, but the declines that we've seen in commodity prices, and the LME Metals Index will have taken another leg lower in here today when it's updated. And it's back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average and the upper side of the underlying base formation, and no real sign that it's going to find support in these levels. So This is, I think, rather important, but it's not all about China. The yield curve spread is now negative at 7.6 basis points. So that's clearly indicating that there's going to be a recession anytime between now and the end of 2023, but I suspect it'll be on the shorter end of that time horizon. The difference between the 10-year and the 3-month has contracted by 40 basis points since Friday. So this is coming down fast. And I think the divergence between these two spreads was something I was highlighting back in May, that it's unsustainable because it was an artificial condition. We'd had such a profound move higher at the long end of the curve that bond investors were forced to cut duration. So what they started to do was buy short duration bonds. And that means that there was really outsized demand for bonds at the short end of the curve. And it means that the 3-month yield wasn't keeping pace with the advance that we'd seen in the Fed funds rate. But now it is. So we can just pay attention to the fact that the 3-month yield is at about 2.13%. And the Fed funds rate is at 1.75%. So finally, 3-month yields are starting to price in the very real potential that at the short-term interest rate is going to be 2.5% in 2 weeks' time. So this is a meaningful change. The long end of the curve has stopped rallying. The short end of the curve is pricing in additional interest rate hikes. This is pointing towards exceptionally tight financial conditions. So the financial sector is rolling over. We're going to start to see bank earnings this week. JP Morgan's going to kick it off on Thursday. And the XLF financial sector spider is barely steady in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. We start looking at some of these big banking stocks. Citigroup has been trending downwards for the last year and remains in a clear downtrend. JP Morgan is below the 1,000-day moving average, also still in a clear downtrend. Banks haven't been making money because of the inverted yield curve. Their classic business model doesn't work in an inverted yield curve scenario. The surge that we've had in longer-dated bonds has greatly elevated mortgage rates, so there is no demand for refinancing. That's cutting off an additional source of revenue. But then the very threat of a recession means that they have to increase loan loss provisions. So therefore, they're not going to be able to increase their dividends. And that was the big hope for the financial sector in the last 6 weeks, that large numbers of banks had passed their stress tests. They'd been given permission that they'd be able to increase their dividends. But if they're looking at a recession, then loan loss provisions are going to inhibit them from doing that. Then we can think about Bitcoin. I regard Bitcoin as a barometer for liquidity. And it was down $930 in here today, closing back below the big psychological 20,000 level. So, this is not a bullish looking chart. We have a clear succession of lower of ranges, one below another, and pauses at big psychological levels. The price paused at 40,000 and then did manage to rally back towards 50, but then broke downwards and paused at 30, and broke downwards and paused at 20. So the consistency of the chart suggests that if it breaks down again, well, then the next pause point will be somewhere around 10,000. But perhaps more importantly than that, one of the key consistency characteristics of Bitcoin has been broken. The price is now below a spike peak, and it has never done that before. Now, the other major consistency characteristic is that anyone who's ever bought Bitcoin, all they had to do was hold it for 4 years and they'd make money. So we're now on the 13th of, or excuse me, the 12th of July. And if we look at the July period in 2018, well, then prices are more around the 6,000 level. So even on that barometer, people would still be making money. Now, obviously, this is a product of the extraordinary volatility that we have in Bitcoin. But quite aside from these considerations, there's the reality that it's a liquidity barometer. Bitcoin only has value to the extent that someone else is willing to buy it. And the extent to which people have the money to buy it is a factor of liquidity availability. With tighter financial conditions, prices continue to come down. So it's unlikely to see a significant recovery until financial conditions begin to lighten up. Now, if we are on the cusp of recessions, not simply in the USA, but also in Europe and then also in China, well, then a lot of the factors that have been contributing to inflation are going to be mitigated. So commodity price inflation is going to start to abate. We can then think about the kinds of things that have been contributing to the perception of really high prices. Lumber has been pulling back all the way between March and June and then rebounded, but so far it's holding the breakout. So it's still hovering above the base formation prior to the pandemic. Soybeans are pulling back exceptionally violently. The acreage that's been planted is significantly higher this year because of the high cost of fertilizer. And corn prices are also coming back. And that's more a factor of oil prices. So we've had big moves in the commodity complex, not just in the industrial resources, but also in the agriculture sector. So some of these high-flying fertilizer companies have come back in a dynamic manner. Now, Mosaic was pretty much unchanged in here today, but it is back in the region of the 200-day moving average and the upper side of the underlying range, but it's got a lot of work to do. And Nutrien is also extending its decline through the 200-day moving average. Fertilizer prices are exceptionally high. If commodity prices come down, well, then fertilizer prices will also come down. So there's the real potential here that these shares are going to get knocked back further. The energy sector has been the best performing sector over the course of the last 2 years and is now in the region of the 200-day moving average. If oil breaks down tomorrow, it's going to take the oil sector with it. So we're going to see an additional rotation. One of the things that has been very clear in the early part of this year was demand for energy shares because everything else was going down. What I find interesting is that some of the electric vehicle companies aren't going down any longer. So Lucid has been going sideways now for the last 4 months. Rivian, and I am starting to see Rivian cars being driven around the place. Well, it's not declining. It's basically going sideways. So, of course, these companies have got secured funding. Rivian has a big brother in Amazon, Lucid from Saudi Arabia, Tesla from Elon Musk. So Rivian has, it's got negative expenditures, but it's got plenty of cash, 16 billion. So it's not going to disappear anytime soon. So there is obviously some differentiation starting to come through in the technology sector. We have companies that have cash and have the potential to weather a recession. There's going to be plenty that don't. And Peloton is a good example of one of those. They've had to give up on manufacturing their own equipment. That's despite the fact that they bought a factory. They're basically going to, they bought one of their competitors and they bought their factory, they bought their manufacturing equipment, and now they're just going to have to abandon it. So they've cash of about $879 billion, but their cash from operations is negative. So they're going to run out of money really quite quickly. And that means that they're either going to have to sell more shares or they could easily just go bust. So there's obviously some clear risk still within the technology sector. And the fact that Uber has been going sideways, despite the revelations that have been evolving about its business practices, is also an indication that a lot of the bad news is already in the price. It's down from 60 to 20 and back in the region of the lows from 2020. So what we're now starting to see is that a lot of the selling has already taken place in the technology sector. There are going to be companies that will go bust, but we haven't yet seen the selling pressure starting to come through in the defensive portion of the market. And we're going to start to see defensive companies starting to play catch up. Now, the dividend aristocrats, they have the ability to increase dividends, and they will be doing that. And they have generally tendedto be offered the clearest signals of buying at the bottom of markets, because people will buy dividend growth when dividend yields rise. So if we do see a significant drawdown, then this is going to be one of the sectors where people come back in first because of the strength of their business models. But globally, tighter financial conditions are going to have significant knock-on effects. And central banks are terrified of inflation. And until inflationary pressures start to abate and that starts to show up in official statistics, then we're still going to be in a tight environment. Now, as we think about how is this recession going to eventually end? Well, it's likely that we'll have looser financial conditions, lower interest rates, more money made available, and speculative portions of the market will start to recover. With the war in Ukraine, the greater geopolitical stress with China, then energy independence is going to be more important. Solutions to provide for that are going to be popular. They'll also be realizable because of lower commodity prices. So I don't think this is time to write off renewable energy, and but that doesn't mean it can't fall before we see a recovery. And we're certainly in a more risky environment overall. There's a lot of speculation and about the official interference in the gold market, and gold prices were down an additional $8 in here today. We had the failed upside break above 2000. It's coming back down to the lower side of the range to test the 1000-day moving average. And this is where we would need to see support coming through if the consolidation is to be given the benefit of the doubt and a broad top formation is completion is to be avoided. So gold is certainly at risk here because so many other commodities are breaking downwards. And certainly it's something to keep a close eye on. If we see a clear upward dynamic within the next $50 of decline, then that will be at least a short-term signal of demand returning to dominance. But it is certainly for the bulls to prove. I think with that, I'll leave you for today.